This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, with Christopher John with me tonight. Chris, how are you?
Andrew, I'm doing fine, sir. I was going to pick between a couple of words to call you. I was thinking about it on the way in because a compatriot of yours let me in on the secrets, the inside language for Italians, you know, paisan or goomba.
Goomba. Is that Thomas tell you that?
No. It's a better source. It's a native Italian.
Who's that?
Tony.
Tony DeFlata?
That's right.
Oh, man. Yeah. Tony.
So somewhere between paisan and goomba, yeah.
That's a good thing. Those are good things in our culture, you know? So we're on an open show tonight.
We are.
And therefore, our listeners are our guests tonight. They get to call in. They get to ask the questions. And they get to lead the direction of our conversation tonight. So they can call in and ask about anything. Dealing with personal finances, be it Medicare. You know, I've been dealing with some Medicare issues for my own situation, and you could call in and talk about life insurance or
retirement. 401k, 403b. Everybody in some way, shape, or form is their own advisor because they're either making choices or they're just letting it sit.
Yep.
So what should you be doing?
You know, there's this crazy economist who came out like two, three weeks ago, Armstrong, I think his name is, and he says, you know, Supreme Court ruling, talking about fees, and it sets the government up to grab all the pension plans. And, you know, I understand why he's got such a small modicum of truth that he could possibly make that kind of argument with, but to, you know, come across like you're an authority and that this is something we ought to all be seriously interested in or concerned about, you know, we're fee-only advisors. We don't care. We don't care if the government's going this way or that way. We don't care. We have no horse in the race. We just want people to know what we believe is the best truth that you can get. And to, in any way, shape, or form, for us to alarm people that the government could grab pensions, 401ks, based on that Supreme Court ruling would be absolutely incorrect and wrong on
sure.
our part to do that.
Sure.
You know, so I have no idea what the guy's thinking about, but, you know, I don't see it in the United States of America. And, you know, people all want to, I don't like Barack Obama. I don't like him, you know, the policies he's implemented and so forth. But I also don't see anything that he can do or is going to do in the next year and a half that he's got left. And there's a lot of people afraid that he's going to make himself the czar at the end of 2016. You know, the liberals were afraid of that with George W. Bush. I'd hear people come into my office who are liberal, and they would tell me, oh, you know, George W. Bush is trying to change the election laws and so forth. And now there's a liberal in office, and now the conservatives are concerned that Barack Obama is trying to change the. So whoever's in office, the other side, just comes up with these crazy things that they're concerned about.
Sure, it's a very difficult thing. Typically, no one can do things like that are people like Vladimir Putin,
yeah,
you know, who can do things. But Michael Bloomberg did it. You know, Giuliani wanted to in New York City, but he didn't feel politically he could get it done. Bloomberg changed from two election maximum to three election, and he elected himself, and he got himself elected a third time. So that takes something.
Yeah, well, but I don't think Barack Obama has it in any way, shape, or form to try to do it, nor does I think he want it, to be honest with you.
Right.
I think he's had it.
Yeah, no, and there's no, yeah, it would have to be a groundswell of support. It's not there.
It's not there. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight. You can call in and ask about investments or insurances or Medicare or retirement plans, IRAs, Roths, whatever the case may be, estate planning, elder care planning. If it's about your personal finances, we'll help you with it. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask your question about and direct the conversation, because you get to be the guest tonight. 410-922-6680. So I'm writing an article right now, Chris, on a form 5498.
So, that's a great form.
Yeah. So many of our listeners, in the last 30 days, even as of today, they may be opening their mail, and they're getting a thing that looks like an official tax form, and it is.
Sure.
And it's a form 5498, and they're all upset. They're all upset. Oh, I got this, and it's a month after I had to file my taxes. What am I to do now? And, you know, this is so late, and they're all upset. And the problem is that a 5498 is nothing more than an informational form from the IRA custodian to the IRS. And then the IRS takes the information that the IRS, that the custodian, like a Schwab or Fidelity or Merrill Lynch or something like that, they send it to the IRS. The IRS takes that information, puts it in their computer database, and then does compliance validation checking of your tax return. So if you say that I did an IRA contribution, they want to see on the 5498 that says you did an IRA contribution. If you say you did a rollover, they want to see on a 5498 that you did a rollover. You know, and the list goes on. And they have this little form gives them like five or six pieces of information that they then plug into their computer system, and they use it for compliance validation of individuals' tax returns. That's all it is.
Right.
And the law requires that when a third party is required by the government to send information to the government, that third party must send the exact same information to the taxpayer, unless it's your phone records. That's a joke. Anyway, I got to go to Mike in Perry Hall. Mike, how can we help you?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Good evening.
Yes.
How's everybody?
Good.
Fine, thank
What's
you.
Up?
Good. Okay. Two questions. One is I work for the VA. I'm a FERS. I'm part-time. I've only been there about 10 years. I have about $100,000 in my FERS and my thrift savings, I should say. And they recently had a seminar. He's an outside vendor who's trying to get us to convert our FERS to a fixed annuity. And I didn't know whether that was a good idea or not.
Well, you're saying they want you to roll over your TSA into your TSP into
right.
a fixed annuity. You know, that's the number one compliance fiduciary issue on the TSP and the SEC and the state securities commissioners is concern over annuity salespeople trying to get people to roll over money to their annuities when you consider the fees and commissions they have as compared to the cost of the TSP or whatever other 401k they're in. So I'm not saying it's a bad idea, Mike. I'm just saying that it's something that the yellow flag should go way up on, and you should know without the influence of the salesperson, you should know why you would do it and understand it fully from an objective point of view. And you should also go talk to the TSP people and tell them that this third party is making these presentations to people and see if they agree that these people, because the TSP people are very concerned about this.
Well, they actually allowed him to come to the hospital I work at and give the seminar. And the person who...
I think that if the TSP people knew that the VA allowed them to come in and make that kind of statement and so forth, the TSP people would be very upset. That's my personal opinion, because there's been numerous articles on this in the professional journals, how TSP is very concerned about this exact same issue.
Okay. Now, if you were to go with an annuity, would you go variable or fixed?
Again, it depends on what your goals and objectives are. It depends on your risk tolerance, and it especially depends upon what kinds of fees and expenses. You know, and one thing that I'm concerned about when you say an annuity, I would, you know, one of the things I'm concerned about these annuities, tell me, Mike, what rate of return is he telling you you're going to get on your fixed annuity?
It was an incredible amount. He said something would be a fee of 0.95% per year, but they would give us back 14.7%. And I thought, wow, that sounds really high.
It's an absolute, total misrepresentation and misleading statement, and there's nothing even remotely close to true what he's telling you.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. It just sounded fantastic.
And that's why you should go to the TSP people and say, the VA brought this person in to talk, and this is the kind of garbage that he was spilling out to you, you know, to the people. And I would, you know, if I were the VA, I would be extremely concerned that I brought a person in to say those kind of things to you. Because even if you misunderstood what he said, okay, it's not right that the person came in and said anything that would lead that kind of misunderstanding to somebody like yourself, and you don't in any way, shape, or form sound like a, you know, a person that can't grasp what somebody's telling you.
Yeah, I just had a bad feeling about it. That's why I thought I better talk to a party such as yourself. My second question.
Can you hold on with me? And I'm going to come back to you and do it because I got to keep my traffic and things. Hold on one sec. I'll be right back to you. All right.
Already.
All right. Go ahead. Put them on hold, Anita, and then because there you go. You got them on hold? Or do I have them on? I got them on hold. There you go. Go ahead. Traffic, Nick Rehack. Take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we got to fly because we got a lot of people online here. Mike, go ahead,
yes,
Mike,
sir.
Real quick.
My second question concerns health insurance. I'm 65, looking at retirement in 1 to 2 years. I have Federal Blue Cross Blue Shield. This same individual told me I should drop it and go on Medicare because it will be cheaper for me to do that, the premiums. One thing that's, I don't know if you're aware of, that especially you were seeing in the Baltimore metropolitan area, is the rise of boutique practices where they're not accepting any insurance at all, and especially with Medicare. So even if you submit the claim yourself, you cannot get reimbursement.
Okay, so this is an interesting question because federal workers are one of the only ones that can go with just Medicare Part A and don't have to get Medicare Part B because they're their medical insurance covers Part B, Part D, and it is the Medicare supplement Medigap. So what he's telling you...
That's what I did.
Yeah,
that's
so what so what he's telling you is to drop the federal medical insurance and go with Part B, Part D, and Medigap. And I would have to look at that individually, but I normally do not recommend that to my clients. I typically, you know, request that they stay on the federal government health insurance plan. And there's lots of different reasons I have for that, and I don't typically recommend they take Medicare Part B. So that's the way I typically look at it. I'd have to look at it specifically in order to say in your situation which is better. I got to run, Mike. Sorry, I can't keep going.
All right, thank you.
Wait, bye. What's that? I'm going to one, right. Ben in Randallstown, are you there?
Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
That's good. Listen, I've been listening to you for about a couple of months now, and I wanted to find out, my brother works for Interscope Records. He's a producer there.
Okay.
And he has about, well, he was getting a check for almost about $1.2 million, and he don't want to give his children straight out cash, mess it up. So he was talking about doing a trust fund.
Okay.
And I told him I was checking some things for him. What's the easiest way to set up a trust fund where they can be allocated so much money per month to live on?
Is this only if he dies, or is this something he wants to do now while he's alive?
He wants to do now while he's alive.
And so he wants to set this up for his children?
Yes.
Okay. And he's got plenty of money to live on himself?
Well, yes, they make, him and his partner makes about $500,000 every time they write a song.
Okay, so
and then you got to sell, you get royalties and so forth.
How old
like
is how old are his children?
His daughter is 17.
Okay,
and his son is 15.
Okay,
but he don't want to give money, like
yeah,
you know, he want to be wise with the money, you know.
No, I understand. Now, you know, there's no, at those ages, there's no significant advantage of setting up a trust for those children until they're either 18 and not in college or 23 and out of college. Now, there's some benefit, but it's just not overwhelming benefit because children...
He want to have a control situation. He want to be a control situation where they just don't have the right to go in and just, you know what I mean, Dad, give me $10. I'm going to buy this new this or that, whatever the case, you know, because, you know, people think that we got a lot of money, want to do a lot of school.
Well, the only way he can set up a trust fund and do it right and make sure he covers all his bases, he has to go to an estate attorney and get that, you know, like next week we're going to be talking with Kevin Brass. And, you know, Kevin can talk about setting up a trust fund, but a lawyer has to set up a trust fund.
Right, I understand. Can you allocate to the bank how much money they can draw down every month like that?
Well, in the trust fund, you can tell the trustee, and the trustee doesn't have to be a bank, Ben. It can be you. You could be the trustee. So whoever the trustee...
For the bank to be the trustee, otherwise, because the other way they look at him with like an evil eye, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like
whoever he sets the trustee as, he can give them whatever instructions he wants. He can say, you can't allocate any money to them unless they have this, this, or that, or you can give them a lot of flexibility, you can give them pure discretion. So he can pretty much tell the trustee, but he has to tell it to him when he writes the document. He can't just tell it to him day in and day out after he's put the money in. He can't say, oh, this month I want you to do this, and oh, and this month I want you to do that. He's got to write a general guideline in the document, and then the trustee has to follow the guidance given to them in the general document.
My last
question
will be gone.
Yeah.
I'm
go ahead.
My last question. Say if he's putting $500,000 for each one of them.
Okay.
The question you want to ask, can he pay all the taxes on the $1 million? That way that $500,000 is really their $500,000.
Well, the answer is when he puts the money into the trust, that's typically what he's going to be doing is putting after-tax money into the trust. Now, it's not 100% because if he has highly appreciated stocks, he could put those in and they would still owe taxes on it. But this is an interesting question, and this is what I was sort of getting to in the beginning, Ben. A trust is a complex entity that causes all kinds of unique tax situations, and it depends on whether the interest and dividends and capital gains of the trust are paid out to the children or if they're retained in the trust. And here's the thing that you have to think about with a trust, Ben, and that is that if a trust makes just $12,000 of income, either in interest, dividends, or capital gains, the trust is in the 39.6% federal income tax bracket and 23.8% capital gains bracket. So a trust is not something to set up lightly without qualified estate advice and qualified tax advice working together so that your brother understands the consequences of what he's doing. All right?
Hey, Drew, leave your telephone number, not your website. Leave your telephone number.
It's 410-823-7283. All right?
What's the best time to call you? He's in L.A. What's the best time to eat 3 hours behind you? What's the best time to call you?
You know, pretty much any time. If I'm not available, they'll normally just set an appointment up for you. All right?
All right.
Thank you, buddy. Take care. Rob in Kent Island, are you still there? Rob? Well, I got to go. And I put him on hold, so we'll see if he comes back. All right? Well, we're just going to go to Mark Thibodeau and, Nick Rehack in traffic. And we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, we'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Well.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get to a couple of our callers in the first half hour. We have new callers on now, but if you wanted to call back or if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, we're going to Howard in Perry Hall. Howard.
Yes. I was calling because, and I think you were referring to it earlier, we're all being bombarded with these advertisements on radio and TV by these, I guess they're brokers, who are guaranteeing bonuses on investment with them of up to 10% and then guaranteed never lose a penny type of investment. I know it can't be for real. My wife asked me why, and I can't really answer her.
Well, let me answer the question for you, okay? All right. So here's how it works. Let's say somebody's offering you a 7% bonus. That's the typical number I hear, 7%. All right?
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely true. You put in $100,000. At the end of the first week that you put in your $100,000, you'll have $107,000 on your statement. Okay? So you technically, you got your bonus. All right?
Uh-huh.
But the contract also says that if you leave them before a certain period of time, and it's normally like 10 years, if you leave them in 10 years, they're going to hit you with a surrender charge. That surrender charge normally starts somewhere in the neighborhood of at least 10%, and that 10% normally will go on for 5 or 6 years, and then it'll start maybe dropping to 8% and 7% in the last couple of years, and then finally after 10, 12, whatever years, it'll be zero, all right? Now, if you think about that surrender charge, so if a few years down the road, 2 years down the road, you say, you know, this thing just isn't working the way I thought it was going to work. I'm going to take my bonus and I'm going to leave. And then all of a sudden they hit you with a 10% surrender charge. Well, guess what? You don't get your bonus, do you? Because they just hit you with a surrender charge. All right.
Right.
You say,
what if 10 years?
Right. So what if I stay the whole 10 years and I don't pay the surrender charge? Then I did get my bonus, didn't I? Well, here's the issue to that. All right. So what happens is in the annuity, there's all kinds of fees built into the annuity. There's a fee for this, a fee for this, a fee for this, a fee for that, a fee for this. And when you add all those fees up, it normally adds up to somewhere in the neighborhood of at least 3%, and I've seen as high as 5% in these contracts, okay?
Per year.
Per year. 3 to 5% per year. Now, if at the end of 10 years, and also they had your money to do with what they wanted to, and if they made more money than they had obligated to pay you, then did they really pay you? I mean, you know, then they made some more money. So now let's look at it. Let's just stick with the fees now. Let's say it was just 3% a year for 10 years. They made 30% on your money. So let me ask you a question, Howard. Who paid the 7% bonus to you?
Right.
The insurance company, or did you pay it?
They paid it.
No, but you paid it to yourself, man, because what happened is they made 30% of fees on you, and they gave you 7 of it back. So what kind of bonus is that? And if in the first 10 years, if I try to get out, they're going to hit me with a surrender charge. I mean, it's so much smoke and mirrors, it isn't funny. Now you say, well, how do they guarantee that I'm not going to lose money? Well, the way they do that is they say, Howard, if the market goes up, I'm going to give you the rate of return of the market. But it's based on my formula. My formula is da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's so complicated, it's hard to understand. But if the market doesn't go up or it goes down, you're not going to lose a thing. Well, the answer to that is very easy, that when you read the formula of how you make money on the upside, they actually aren't promising you the stock market in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
They're offering you something very limited as compared to what the market's going to do. And, yeah, if the market makes 32%, like in 2013, you might make 6 or 7%. But if the market makes 6% or 5% or 8%, you're likely to make 3 or 4 if you're lucky, you know. So And they're investing your money such that, you know, and they've got all these fees built in there. It is so full of smoke and mirrors. And here's the last point to always keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if there's a 10% surrender charge in that policy, there's likely a 7 to 10% commission to the person who sells it to you. Okay? Now,
right.
In the world of the internet, where I can go on and get pretty much any information and buy anything I want in a click of a button. I can invest hundreds of thousands of dollars easily at Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or whatever, whatever. If these investments are so great, why don't they just put them on the internet and let you buy them for free? And the answer is because nobody would buy them for free because they have to be sold to people. They have to have somebody put that in front of you and give you the sales pitch to get you to sign on the bottom line, because there's most people are highly skeptical something's wrong here.
Right.
And that's why they don't just sell it on the internet. It's got to be sold, and that's why you pay handsomely to people to sell it, because there's a lot of money for the people who sell them and the people who create them to be sold. Not for the people who are buying them necessarily.
Right.
All right?
And that's why I was telling my wife that in our case, maybe like a tier of price funding situation for us might be a good thing, because I think we have a lot of faith in a company like that.
Well, you know, Tier Price does a good job. There's no doubt about it. You know, you just have to understand the risk that you're taking. If you, you know, if market goes up, you're going to go up. If market goes down, you're going to go down. And you just have to have a strategy as to how you're
doing your own thing.
Yeah. Right. I got to move on, Howard. Good question.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Let's go to Jay in Baltimore. Student loan. You still there, Jay?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead. Ask your question.
I owe about $65,000 in student loans, and I want to know the fastest way to pay them off.
Okay, well, that's a complicated question, because you got to go in and you got to get all the loans. And oops, is he gone?
Probably just listening via the radio.
Either that, or he was disappointed in my
cell phone.
Oh. Well, the answer to Jay's question is he's got to go in and he's got to get a list of exactly what he owes, because he could have all kinds of tranches. He could have one for $5,000 at 8%. He could have another one for $20,000 at 3%. He could have private loans. He could have government loans. So the first thing he has to do is figure out what each one is, what interest rate they're at, are they public or private? And then he has to start, you know, analyzing, can I refinance? Can I refinance down to a lower rate? Can I work for some kind of organization for a certain period of time and get my, you know, and get the debt forgiven because I worked for America for 10 years or whatever the case may be? There are also all kinds of, charities out there that if you do volunteer work for them, they'll pay portions of your student loan for you. It's a volunteer for relief of your student loan debt. And there's lots of different organizations out there like that. But let's say he doesn't want to do any of that and he can't refinance. The best way to do it is he starts with the highest interest rate, lowest balance. So if he has one at $5,000 at 8%, and he has another one $2,000 at 7%, I'd pay off the $2,000 one first and then go back and attack the $5,000 one at 8%. Why do you do it that way? You always attack the highest interest rate because you want to get those off the books as fast as possible, and you want to go for the lowest balances so that you don't have to make a minimum payment against that one anymore as soon as it's paid off, and now you can double down on the next one in line. And if you keep doing that, you will pay off those loans faster than you can imagine. And the last thing you always have to do is when you owe that kind of money, you have to really go on an austerity budget, you know, and that's something that most students don't want to hear. At least the ones I've ever worked with, you know, they don't want to hear that, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, I got to sacrifice, you know.
Sure, yeah, you're just starting out.
But, you know, those things will be an albatross around your neck. The other thing you can do is make the minimum payments, get into a program where you make the minimum payments, and if you're faithful, what's it, 25 years or something in a row, then they'll forgive the debt at the end of the 25 years, and all you have to do is pay the income taxes on the debt forgiveness at the end of 25 years. So that is a unique thing that has to be looked at on a student-by-student basis. I wish I could get in touch with these young people before they borrow that kind of money,
right,
as opposed to them coming to me after they've already borrowed it. Right now, I've got to go to Mark Thibodeau, and I'm going to be back and answer any other questions. 410-922-6680. Be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. We have about 6 or 7 minutes left.
I gotta say, the time's flown.
It really has, and we don't have anybody online, so if somebody wants to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680, if you want to call and ask a question, probably can get 1 to 2 questions in before the end of this little 7 or 8 minute segment. What else is going on out there, Chris?
Well, I just it's interesting. Every day you start hearing about people talking about raising interest rates. So the woman who was with the FDIC, she's now head of Washington College.
Sheila Bair.
Yeah. Yeah, talking about the need to raise rates.
Yeah, well, you know, the market's doing that anyway.
Sure.
I mean, you know, the long treasury has been quite volatile in the last 3 weeks. I was telling somebody earlier, Mark, you know, from the manager of WCBM, that you know, that the Italian and Spanish interest rates went from 1.1% up to 2.2% in just less than 3 weeks or something of that sort.
What a huge move.
It was an amazing move. And the U.S. bond market went from like 1.7% to 2.4% today. That's a pretty big move also.
Percentage-wise, it is.
And the two-year treasury, even more important, went from 0.46 or 7 just a few weeks ago up to 0.67. And that's a, you know, for the two-year treasury, that's a big move. So you've gotten a lot of volatility in the bond market. So it's interesting. Anyway, we're going to go to Janet in Baltimore. How can we help you, Janet?
Hi, I got a question for you. I am 77 years old, and I own my own home. I have 3 children, all adults. Now, when I pass away, I left it in my will that the house will be left to them equally.
Okay.
But someone told me I should have some kind of a will where it automatically turns over to them so that they'd have to not pay any taxes or something like that, or that they couldn't take my house away from me prior to that. But I don't know what to do about
well,
that.
That's an interesting statement, and, you know, first off, your children will have to pay no taxes if the house goes to them via the will. They will have to go through probate, so they'll have to go through the process of telling the government that you passed away, and here's your death certificate, and here's your will, and here's the asset she owns, and we want it, you know, to go to us because the will says it goes to us, and the government will say, fine. Now, to go through probate, there's a lot of legal things that have to be done. They might have to hire an attorney, and it might cost them $2,000 or $3,000 to do that. So one way you can leave the house to the children without having to go through that is you can have your deed of your house rewritten into what's called a life estate, which means that you own the house, but you get to live there, but you've technically are leaving it to your children now, instead of when you pass away, it depends on how the life estate deed is written. And so basically you avoid that probate and it goes to them just by them presenting to the Department of Records that you've passed away and the deed says that we own the house, so the house gets turned over to them. Now, there's some more sophisticated things you can do, and you can call back in next week and ask Kevin Bress about this, that if you're concerned about Medicaid, if you're concerned about going into a long-term care facility and somebody taking your house away from you because your medical bills are running up, then Kevin can talk to you about what's called a Medicaid trust, where you turn your house into this trust. The house would then ultimately go to the children when you pass away, but you can live in it while you're healthy and everything's going fine. But if 5 years or so down the road, you did need to go to a long-term care facility, under the current laws, your children could go and say, Mom doesn't have any money. And Medicaid would look and say, you're right, she doesn't have any money. And the only thing we see is a trust that she set up 5 years ago or more, and that doesn't count, so we'll take care of it. So it depends on what you're talking about. That's why I'm being, You know, I can't.
Yeah, well, all I have is my home. I really have nothing else, and I'm holding on to that. That's all I have.
Yeah, well, if that's all you have, then that is a possibility. The big negative of doing a Medicaid trust is that if you're totally healthy and 4 or 5 years down the road, you decide, hey, I'm going to sell my house and I'm going to move into an apartment. Let's just use that as an example. You would not be able to take the $500,000 capital gain exclusion on the sale of your house. You would lose that, in my opinion, because the house is no longer owned by you. It's owned by the trust. And the only one who can take the $500,000 capital gain exclusion is an individual. And so that would be a negative of doing the Medicaid trust. But I would talk to Kevin about that if long-term care is your issue. Next week, he'll be here with us.
Okay. When will he be there? All week or?
No, just Wednesday night. Only on Wednesday night. Money, riches, and wealth. All right?
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Janet. You know, I call that the hallway estate planning advice.
There you go.
You know, where somebody talks and says, you know, hey, this is what you ought to do. And, they did that for themselves. Let's see if we can, you know, is that last caller? No? Yeah, we're going to just go on. And anyway.
Yeah, we only have about a minute.
Next week is Kevin Bress, and he's an elder care attorney.
Yeah, he's been on before.
He's been on before. He did his own show on WCBM on Sunday morning, so a lot of people are familiar with him.
Yeah.
But he can really answer those questions about, you know, people who are concerned about, you know, they only have a house and they don't want it to get they want to leave it to the children. They don't want it to just get swallowed up if they end up in a bad long-term care
situation. That's a complex area of
law,
too.
It is a complex area. It is a very complex area, but it's a very important one.
It is.
And, but here's the thing that, you know, I wanted to, you know, Janet's question, you know, I want to get the house into a place where my children won't have to go through probate or something like that. And a lot of times parents put the name of the house in joint name with their children.
Yeah.
That is one of the biggest no-nos. You don't want to put your house in joint name with your children. I don't have time to explain it, but just take my word for it. Do not put your house in joint name with your children. It is a bad idea. Anyway, this is Money, Riches, and Wealth, and this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.